You are listening to BensTorah.com.
We are going to discuss groundbreaking topics of what was really going on in the Garden of Eden. What does human spirituality, how does it affect animals and the planet? Why does the Torah compare people to trees? The population bomb. Should birth control be encouraged around the world? And finally, what is the Jewish view on abortion, which I got a lot of flack for from certain circles, that how could you talk about these things in public? These are things that should only be discussed with your local rabbi, and you don't want to tell people things in public because they are not capable of understanding on their own, and they may get misinformed, and everybody may go out and get an abortion, which I don't believe, and that's why I'm talking about it. But we'll get to that in a little while. There's a fascinating medrash that the rabbis tell us that when Adam was first created, God took him on a tour of the Garden of Eden. And he said to him, "Look how beautiful my creation is. It is so nice and it is so productive. Just make sure you take care of it and you do not destroy it. This world was created for a purpose, to succeed and not to be destroyed." However, we find a dichotomy in a passage right afterwards that says, God told Adam and Eve, "Pru urvu, you shall multiply upon the earth and fill up the land, vikiv shuhu, and you shall conquer it." Conquer it implies the concept of human beings were given the right to do whatever they want with the possession that they were granted. So we seem to have two different philosophies here. One, God is telling Adam and Eve, take care of this world. And the other one is, conquer it, use it for whatever purpose you want. There's another fascinating passage in Deuteronomy, which says, when you besiege a city for many days to fight and conquer it, unfortunately back then war was a fact of life, it says you have a problem. You need wood for sieging equipment in order to build your things like they have in the movies that go up to the wall and smash to the wall. So where are you going to get the wood from? God says, do not destroy its fruit trees. You're not allowed to cut down the fruit trees surrounding the city that you're intending to conquer. It says, why? Because you eat from them. And then it says a very strange statement. Is the tree a person that it should fall before you in a siege? Bizarre statement. Is the tree a person? What does that mean, is the tree a person? So there are two commentaries on this. One, the first is, trees do not belong to people. They're not humans' properties. And man has no right to inflict wanton damage upon them. You have no right to just go cut down trees. Even though you're in a siege, it's a life-threatening situation, you need the wood, God says you cannot cut down the fruit trees. The other trees that are non-bearing fruit, you can cut down, but the fruit trees, you can't. The other explanation is humans depend on trees for nourishment, and preventing cutting down fruit trees for no purpose or no significant purpose is for humans' benefits. So we see another concept here, that even though there is a seeming need to do it, God specifically warns us to be very careful and not to cut down the trees. Let's look at another mitzvah in the Torah. Another mitzvah says, if you're wandering in the field and you come along and you see a bird that is sitting on its eggs, and back then they didn't have groceries, and you wanted scrambled eggs, but you also wanted to mix it with a little meat. So how do you get that? You take the bird and you take the eggs, then you'll have scrambled eggs with meat. The Torah tells us you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to take both the mother and the eggs. You have to send away the mother. You cannot do both. And Nachmanides comments on this mitzvah and says the reasoning behind it is taking the bird and its eggs is similar in a concept to destroying a whole species. And God is making us aware, even though we are allowed to use animals for food, we have to be very careful not to extinguish a species for our own benefit. So we have this tug of war. V'kivshuha means to conquer the world. It implies a conflict between our needs and the needs of the world. The good of humans versus the good of the planet. The goal in life is how do we go and achieve the balance? What is good for us and what is good for the planet? And that's where Judaism comes along and describes to us the parameters where we can enjoy the world, we can have a happy life here in this planet, yet we have to do it responsibly. Well, what is that balance? I could say we should be forbidden to eat meat. We should be forbidden to kill any animal. Like the Buddhists say, all life is sacred, and there's certain the Jains are very, very strict about killing life, that they go around and they won't step. Be very careful where they step. They won't step on ants. In fact, when they're dealing with things, with fruit and things to that nature, they put the cloths on their face that, heaven forbid, they should breathe in a mosquito or a bug. So they're extremely careful about any form of life. Well, should we go in that direction? Well, maybe we should never ride a horse. And you'll say, well, the horse doesn't mind. Well, have you ever had anybody ride on your back? I'm sure it's not a very pleasant situation. If you go, and the proof is, when you go out to the wild and you find a Mustang, like in all the Roy Rogers movies or the Lone Ranger, and they get these wild horses and you try to jump on his back, what's a horse going to do? It's going to go, nay, yeah, come on, like Mr. Ed, come on, jump on my back, let's go. No, it's going to throw you off. Why? Because it's not a pleasant experience having a human jump on its back and start riding it. So maybe we should never have horses to go horseback riding. Back in the good old days, when they didn't have machines and you needed to plow your field, it was difficult for a human to plow a field. So what did you do? You took an oxen, you put a yoke on it, and you had it pull your plow. Well, I guarantee you, the ox was not happy. It was not a pleasant experience for that oxen. So what are humans instructed to do? Should we not use animals at all? And last but not least, animal experimentation. I used to be, when I was younger, I was going to be pre-dental to become a dentist. And you just can't go and get good grades. Everybody knows that. Anybody's gone to medical school or whatever. You have to do a whole bunch of extracurricular activities to put on your application to show that you were a Boy Scout, you did youth groups, you did experimentations, you did everything. Get the longer the resume, the better chance you'll have to get into dental school or medical school. So I volunteered for a laboratory in the neuropsychiatric section of UCLA. And to this day, I have regret what I did to those poor little kittens. It was terrible. Forget about the monkeys, what they did to the monkeys. But the experiments they did and the brain surgery they did on the cats, all right, you know, it looked awful to me, but practically, they're developing cures for Parkinson's disease. They're developing I was working on sudden infant death syndrome. We were doing important research to find out the causes for that. Was that permissible? Were we allowed to do experimentation on animals for the greater good of humankind? So we need a source. We need somebody or somewhere to tell us what is right and what is wrong. So Jews believe in the Torah, that it is a divinely inspired. Many people believe that. Orthodox Jews believe it was a direct verbally given to Moses from God. So if God created the world, God gives us the parameters for a successful world. And after the flood, the story of the flood, God said to Noah, Noah, you are allowed to eat meat. Now, is it the healthiest thing to eat meat? Definitely not. You're much better off if you don't eat meat. But were we permitted, were humans permitted to eat meat? Yes. God said you're allowed to use the animals. But there are certain parameters. There is a concept called tsar balei chayim. We have to worry about the pain that is inflicted to animals. We are not allowed to do wanton pain or to hurt an animal for no reason whatsoever. But if there's a choice between humans and animals, humans take priority. That's why we're allowed to ride a horse. That's why we're allowed to use oxen for the plows and to use animal experimentation. But everything has to be done in the most humane manner as possible. This is the Jewish belief. From that passage that I quoted about the tree, that you're not allowed to cut down a fruit tree, even when you're in a siege situation, they learn the general prohibition of called Baal Tashchis. You cannot waste. People don't realize that Judaism is extremely strict about wasteful activities. Including in wasteful activities is wasting money, food, drink, fuel, even in a sense, leaving the lights on unnecessarily is included in the prohibition of not wasting. Now, of course, they have an expression, the Talmud has an expression, that the Torah, the laws, were not given to angels. Because in order to be exact, how much light should I need? How much should I keep my light on? How nice should I be to my dog or my cat? You know, to find the exact parameters is impossible for any normal human being. Yet, God understands that we are human, we are fallible, but these are basic guidelines that we should be conscious of not wasting things. That we should be aware that the world was given for our benefit, but not to go and to abuse. The key for our success in life is this consciousness that we are in a partnership with all human beings. We are in a partnership with all creatures. This planet is ours to use, but also to preserve and to elevate. The Talmud tells us that not only are we obligated to take care of trees, and there are many laws which allow, even during times which it's prohibited in Jewish law, not to do work, we are allowed to preserve trees. The Talmud tells us if you have a sick tree, you should pray for that tree. You should pray to God like we go into shul on Shabbos. Mi shaberach, there should be the father of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Rachel, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah should go and make sure that this person gets better. We should say the same thing by a tree. Say, God, please protect this tree. If I have my petunias or my tulips in the kitchen and they're not doing well, you say, please protect my tulips. Now, there is such a concept. The book, the Chinuch, which explains all the mitzvahs, says everyone has to appreciate and conserve the good that was given to us on this planet. Only evil people destroy and do not appreciate what is given for them, to them. And when God says, go and multiply and spread on the earth and conquer it, God was not talking to evil people. God was talking to responsible human beings, good people that understood only they are allowed to go out and conquer the planet. People that are irresponsible are not allowed to go and use the planet for their own gains. Now, there is another interesting prohibition that's mentioned. It's called Loi Tasim Damim Beveisecha. You should not put blood in your house. Now, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't join a Satanist cult or be a vampire or anything like that. That's not what it's talking about. It means you should not do anything that could cause harm to another human being. Included in that prohibition is to have a vicious dog in your property, which is probably a pit bull. Pit bulls, now I'm sure anybody who, especially someone who's a mail carrier, knows pit bulls were basically genetically altered, that they're not all there. And even if you could tame it, they could snap on a dime. And it, they, whenever you hear generally stories of people being hurt by animals, except for that case of the monkey, somebody having a monkey in the house, the same thing. It's generally these pit bulls. So according to Jewish law, it would be forbidden to have such an animal in your house. If you have a roof that people have access to, you are obligated to put a fence around it that just in case someone goes up on your roof, they have to make sure that they cannot fall off it. Now, secondhand smoking is also prohibited. If a person wants to smoke and they want to do whatever they want to their own health, God bless them. But they have an obligation to make sure that no one is hurt by what they want to do. So it's very crucial if someone wants to smoke, they have to smoke in a way that it won't harm other people. And including this general rubric is pollution. There is a prohibition against polluting the environment. Obviously, everybody questions exactly what pollution means, but it is a Torah prohibition to go and pollute the environment. The exact parameters are up to debate, but there is such a concept. In the 60s, I don't know if you all remember it, there were two famous books out there decrying the doom of the world. One was called The Late Great Planet Earth, and the other one was A Population Bomb. And it predicted by 2000, especially 2009, we would all be doomed. There would be no more Earth because people would populate the Earth so much there wouldn't be enough food, there would be great riots across the world, and everybody would beat each other's throats like rats trapped in a trap, and the world would be gone by this time. But lo and behold, there are more people now on this planet than there ever was. In fact, they say that from the beginning of history until now is about equal to the population that we have at present. And yet, there's more food than there ever was. In fact, it is a known fact that the government pays people not to plant. The government dumps tons of wheat into the ocean in order that prices will not go down. If you find out farmers, I was working with a, there was a gentleman here who works with kosher cheeses. He does the Hechsher for kosher cheeses in Wisconsin. And they have all these specialty cheeses, really good stuff. And what they do is, in order to package them, they have to cut off the ends of them to fit in so they can make nice cuts. So at the end of the day, you have hundreds of pounds of different gourmet cheeses there. Now, they're forbidden to sell them because, heaven forbid, they'll lower the price of cheese. So they basically throw them out. Every day they throw out hundreds and hundreds of pounds of cheese until one day someone found out that pigs love kosher cheese, especially with chimes in them and all sorts of spices. They love that. So what happened was that they said, okay, we'll give it to the pig farm next door, and the pigs loved it. One day, the owner of the cheese plant asked the pig man, we'd like to have a barbecue. Can you give us one of your pigs? And he said, okay, we'll sell it to you. He said, a chutzpah, here I am giving you all this cheese, and you won't give me a pig? We're not giving you any cheese anymore. So now all the cheese isn't giving to the pigs, it's being thrown out. And that wanton waste is going on throughout the world. So if the land is producing more, we are developing such technology like in Israel. They've developed such technology to desalinate water. They've developed technology to have olive trees that grow gigantic olives from salt water. They have processes to use a minimal amount of water to create blooming in the desert. It's there all over the place. How come in Ethiopia, how come all over Africa, people are starving? Why? And the answer is, there's plenty of salt water out there.
I mean, no clean water.
There's plenty of desalination, but there are plenty of processes. The reason isn't because the land isn't fertile. The reason isn't we don't have the technology. The reason is because there are dictators that only care about themselves, and they're ready to let their population starve for their own benefit. So the land, God can produce whatever needs. It could be 10 billion, 20 billion people in the world. There's plenty of food for everybody. Humans, men especially, not women, are the ones that are causing hunger throughout the world. And it isn't God who is the problem, it's people who are causing the suffering in the world. The evil leaders, as they say. Now, birth control is a hot topic amongst the Orthodox and amongst Christians also. Now, when it says, "Pru urvu, you shall be fruitful and multiply," many rabbis say that this is an obligation not only on Jews, but also on non-Jews, that non-Jews have an obligation to have many children. According to Jewish law, basically you fulfill your obligation with a boy and a girl. Technically, if you don't have, you have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 girls, you got to keep on trying. That technically. Okay. But basically, birth control is permitted in Judaism. Obviously, this is a hot button topic, and if I'm being recorded, I don't want my head handed to me on a silver platter. So I would say, I would give an introduction, ask your local rabbi for the exact parameters which you are allowed to do it. I will just say some ideas that are there. There are two concepts here. Pru means to have children, and urvu means to raise them. Just to have children and not being capable of raising them is a tragedy. You have to prepare yourself to have children and raise them properly. To bring a child into this world and allow them to become a juvenile delinquent and destroy their own life, some people question whether you're fulfilling the mitzvah in such a case at all. So therefore, part of the preparation is, some people say that that's why Noah waited so long to have kids, because the bottom line is, his generation was totally wicked, and he felt bringing up children in such a scenario was very inappropriate. So, again, exactly which forms are permissible, the pill, different other things, that if it's relevant, we'll talk about it, but this is just a general, generic lecture. There's an interesting book called Freakonomics. I don't know if you've heard about it, but he's a an economist and a statistician. Right, and he wrote this interesting book about weird statistics. And one of the statistics that he found was that crime is directly proportional to abortions. What does that mean? It means that generally crime comes from single-parent families where the parent cannot raise a child properly, and that's where most crime comes from. When abortions are allowed and government supported, these single-parent families choose to have abortions. Ergo, they don't have these children that could cause crime. So in that sense, abortion is a good thing because it decreases the amount of crime. Now, let's talk about abortion from a Jewish standpoint. It's nice to decrease crime, but what does Judaism say about killing a fetus? What is the status of a fetus? According to Jewish law, a fetus is not considered a human being. It's not considered murder, technically. It doesn't have the same punishment as killing a fetus as killing a human being that's already been born. However, it is a very, very serious offense, and abortions are only allowed under very limited circumstances, generally similar to beliefs of pro-life people in a great extent. If the mother's life is in danger before the child is born, then an abortion is allowed. Many times today, because women are having difficulty becoming pregnant, they implant embryos in the womb of the woman, and they implant multiple embryos, hoping that one or two of them will catch. Well, let's say they plant 3 embryos and all 3 of them catch. Having a woman, certain women, carrying 3 children could be a danger. Not everybody is as strong as the Octomom and could have 8 kids. So what happens, are you allowed, according to Jewish law, to have a reduction, to kill one of the embryos in order to not put the mother's life in danger? And the answer is yes, if the doctor deems it so. There are some interesting tangents. Let's say a woman is raped or has incest, or the child they deem is a deformed child. There are certain opinions. Again, I am not saying it. I'm just giving food for thought. Obviously, you have to ask your local authority. There are opinions that say, in the case where the mother's life is going to be totally messed up.
You are listening to Ben's
because of the birth of the child would cause tremendous harm to the family and to the mother. An abortion would be allowed in that scenario. But again, I'm saying this on tape. I am not saying anything, and anybody who has any question, go to your local rabbi. Okay, let's talk about an interesting, fascinating concept of humans, spirituality, and the earth. We find by the great flood, it says that God saw the world, and behold, the world was nishchasa. The world was doing terrible things. And therefore, God said, all flesh on the earth has corrupted its ways, and he had to destroy the entire planet. Okay, so if that's the case, everybody asks, well, human beings, we can understand that they corrupted their ways. But how do animals go and corrupt their ways? And the Medrash tells us something very interesting, that the animals actually did corrupt their ways, that they had relationships, physical relationships, with different species. They had interspecies relationships. And the question is, how in the world does such a concept happen? Because humans have free choice, but animals are subject to nature. So it isn't like an animal chooses to breed within its species. It's part of its nature to breed in species. So what's going on? The animals were all of a sudden having orgies with other animals. It doesn't really make sense on a superficial reading. But they did 15 years ago, Time Magazine did a study on the seagulls of San Francisco. And it turns out that it seems that there are a certain percentage of seagulls that are naturally homosexual. But by San Francisco, they found an abnormally odd high number of seagulls that were homosexual in the San Francisco area. Now, this is not a speech on homosexuality. The Torah obviously says it's a no-no. We're not going to get into the genetics of it, the whatever you want to say, but we're just stating a fact. 5 years ago, they did a similar study in Los Angeles, and they also found a very high number of homosexual seagulls out there. So there is such a concept that human beings not only affect the environment in a physical way, but they also affect the environment in a spiritual way. In fact, they not only affected the living creatures, they affected the actual chemical makeup, the spiritual makeup of the land, so much so that the flood had to come and destroy 3 handbreadths worth of land to root out all the pollution. Now, this explains a fascinating concept. We say on the Kiddush on Friday night that God finished his work on the 7th day. Well, we all know the world was created in 6 days, and God, quote unquote, rested on the 7th day. Well, what does it mean that God finished his work on the 7th day? So the answer is that God created nature on 6 days, and on the 7th day, God tied in human action to nature. So there's a direct correlation between our actions and the way nature works. So there's a concept that if we are good people, we treat each other properly, then nature will work with us. If we are evil and we hate other people, we are corrupt, then the world becomes corrupt along with us. Now, what is the death penalty? The death penalty is, everybody questions, is it a deterrent? Is it not a deterrent? Should it be done or should it not be done? In Jewish law, the death penalty is more, it's not a question of deterrent or not. When they talk about putting someone to death, they use the statement of v'yarta hara mikarbecha, you have to destroy the evil from your midst. It isn't a question whether it would deter another person from doing the same action or not. The question is, there is an inherent evil that is perpetrated by this person. This person is emanating this evil. By getting rid of this individual, you are taking away the evil that is on the planet. Now, how does nature work when it comes to righteous people? We've all heard stories about this righteous person doing this miracle, and part of the Christian faith of becoming a saint is you have to have witnesses that you've done a miracle, or usually that after they're dead they do that. So miracles are part of everything. You have to get two witnesses, like Mother Teresa, in order for her to become sainthood. You have to go through the process of somebody saying they did a miracle, a miraculous thing. Well, you know what they say about all these stories, that anybody who believes all these stories is a fool, but anybody who doesn't believe any of them is also a fool. So that's what they say. Okay. Anyway, let's talk about some stories in the Talmud. Very interesting stories. There was a righteous man, a rabbi called Rabbi Pinchas, the son of Yair. And he was going and doing a tremendous service, trying to save some people who were captured. Back then, they used to capture people and ransom them. That was a common way to make money in the good old days. So he was going down, and they came to a stream, and he couldn't cross the stream. So he said, "Stream, part." So the stream started arguing with him, and he said, "What are you talking about? God told me I have to flow. Who are you to come and tell me not to go?" He said, "Well, I'm coming to do the mitzvah, the commandment of the creator of the world." And the stream said back to him, "Well, so am I. You know, at least I know for sure that I'm going to fulfill the commandment. But you, who knows whether you'll be successful in your mission or not? But I know I'm doing it." So he said to the stream, "Listen, unless you split, I'm going to pray and going to dry you up." So at that point, the stream got a little nervous and split. It happened that another person was coming on the other side who was taking matzah, who was Passover, and they had to get across the stream. So the rabbi said to stream, "Split again." So the stream, you know, got a little nervous, split again. Then there was an Arab who was traveling with him, and he said, "It's not appropriate that I go and my companion doesn't go. You split again." So the stream split three times. So then what happened was, the Talmud says, how great is this rabbi? Moses only split it once. Here this guy is coming three times and he's splitting the stream. Well, I have a question. If he split the stream three times and Moses only did it once, how come when Moses split it, everybody sang? You have this whole song of Moses and a whole thing, and everybody got up, and Miriam came with her tambourines, and all the women were dancing and made a big deal. Well, how come the angels didn't come out and start singing, or everybody start singing? Well, the answer is that when Moses split the Red Sea, he split it for everybody. Whether you're good, bad, or ugly, like a Clint Eastwood movie, right? Whatever you were, the sea split. Now, the sea splitting for everybody, that's a miracle. That's really miraculous. For a righteous person who lives above nature and is a very spiritual person, splitting the sea is a big deal, but it's not such a big deal. And we'll see one more interesting story about the famous rabbi called Rabbi Hanina ben Doisa. He had tremendous amount of miracles done to him, with him. One day his daughter, it was a Friday, his daughter came crying to him. And he said, "My daughter, why are you crying? What's the problem?" She said, they were very, very poor people. He said, "Father, I made a terrible mistake. Instead of putting oil in the lamp, I put vinegar in the lamp. And it's right before the Shabbat, and we're not going to have light for the Shabbat. It's a terrible thing." So he said to her, "Daughter, don't worry. He that said that oil burns will say that vinegar burns." And sure enough, the vinegar burnt until they had enough of the flame for the Havdalah services, and then it went out. All right, take the story any way you want it, but what's the point? The point is, that's the concept. Why does oil burn? There's no reason now, because we can explain the chemical processes, but why does it have to be like that? It doesn't have to be like that. God could easily say vinegar could burn. So when someone lives above nature, if someone is part of the planet, if they respect everything that was given to them, they become one with nature. Nature takes on a totally different perspective. And it is very possible nature can change in order to suit these people's needs. We have to learn that our actions, not only our physical actions, but our spiritual actions, have a direct correlation to what our planet is all about. We were given a planet. We are considered responsible for taking care of this planet. This was given in our care. And we have a moral, spiritual obligation to make sure we do not waste the precious resources or the precious nature we were given. Judaism says we have to be conscious and we have to be aware of that beautiful gift that is given to us, and we can't just wantonly use it for our own purposes, be selfish, because if we go and destroy our own resources and not care about our future children, our future generations, then we are going against everything that God meant when God said, conquer the land, not to desolate the land, not to rape the land, but to conquer it in a way that it makes the world a better place for ourselves and for our future generations. Okay, that's it. Anybody have any questions? No questions? Oh, yes, go ahead.
So if an animal is slaughtered in the least inhumane way, in the most humane way
right.
possible, how does that become still humane?
Well, since God allowed us to have meat, then you want to do the least possible hurt to the animal. And it's interesting, in Europe now, they're trying to take away the Jewish ritual slaughtering because they want the animal to be stunned first. And they stun the animal, that could cause certain brain lesions and different problems to the animal, which would render it not kosher. The way the Jewish way of slaughtering is, it's like if you ever had a paper cut or a very sharp knife cut you, you're not aware that you were cut until sometime later, that you start feeling the pain. The way it works with the Jewish ritual of slaughtering is the knife is so sharp that it has the slightest nick, it renders it invalid. So technically the animal is slaughtered, it's dead before it is even aware that it is dead. So as far as all the ways of slaughtering, putting a bullet in its brain, I don't know if anybody's gone to slaughterhouses and they've seen, or smashing metal through its brain, they're not exactly the most humane way. The most humane ways are the way of the Jewish way to do it. Now, you could say that I don't want to do this to animals, I'm not interested. You know, God bless you. I think not having meat is a good thing. Your arteries won't be as clogged and you'll be much healthier. But you can't have any complaints against someone who does want to have meat, especially since God specifically allowed it. Any other questions? Yes.
In preventive medicine, I remember that we had to go to some slaughter homes, mm-hmm. Places, because you have to know how the animals are slaughtered, how the products are separated, and, you know, for anything related to health and hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
And my question here is, the slaughtering that I present, which is absolutely horrible, you know, I don't want to go from A to Z, but before they put the knife on the animal,
yes.
mm-hmm. okay, which was when the animal was turned upside down,
mm-hmm.
they had electroshock.
Right, it's not allowed in Jewish law.
But wouldn't that also make them have no pain?
I don't know exactly, but it creates a pain. It does something, it ruptures things, and it creates problems. The way the Jewish, my understanding is the way of the Jewish slaughtering is done. It's the most painless way, and obviously it has to be done properly. You know, it's very difficult, unfortunately, when we're mass producing things to be 100% humane. It's much easier to put tons of chickens in little boxes and have free-range chickens, because it's much more cost effective. That's why the Talmud says that an ignorant person should not be allowed to eat meat. And the reason they say that is because someone who isn't aware of the laws, or someone who isn't conscious of the need to take care of animals, their desire for meat will be so great that they won't properly deal with the animals in order to get their meat. Unfortunately, today we want meat. We want veal. We want to stuff cow calves in little boxes and have them atrophy their bodies so we could enjoy their meat, which I think is totally disgusting. But what are you going to do? You know, take away people's desires. You see what happened when they tried to stop prohibition. They tried to stop liquor. You know, imagine if they did something like meat. It would be the meat mafia would come out. It would be 100 times worse. Yes.
How does the kosher meat compare to organic meat? Because, you know, the kosher way of slaughtering is healthier, but you're still using the same cattle that has been given hormones and antibiotics.
Not really.
Is organic meat better
Well, kosher meat relies on a higher authority. You know that. Like Hebrew National. They, right. No, they don't. They don't. Generally, we have someone who deals with meat here, but generally, they're very careful about giving them hormones and things like that. A lot of meat, especially, they don't do these things by kosher meat. By the kosher slaughterhouses, they don't inject the animals. So, yes.
Ritual slaughter.
Yes.
Is that? There's two things. It's a humane way to do it if it's done properly, but it also allows the blood to come out freely. It doesn't remain stuck in. If you stun it beforehand, then the blood won't come out, and it becomes a big problem later on. So in order to avoid that, when you shep an animal, I've seen this numerous occasions, the blood just flows right out. Now, people make mistakes, and the animal does feel pain, but those animals are rejected as far as kosher is concerned. And it used to be, the old days, I can't see how they allowed to do this, but they used to put the animal up on one leg, on one hind leg, it's called chaplain voice, and then put the animal upside down and slaughter. Like that was very painful, no matter how you slice. But in those days, they didn't have now they have like a box they could put the animal in and make it, that is not in any sort of stress, relatively speaking, and it's a lot better. They usually go in a box with the right side up, or it's turned around. It's not pleasant. No matter what, I mean, chefing is not a pleasant thing. People who are trained to do this have to be able to handle it. It's disgusting.
Right. So that's basically the thing. If a person chooses not to have meat, Maimonides said being a vegetarian is a very good thing. But again, the bottom line is riding a horse, having an oxen pull a plow is also unpleasant for the animal. So there is this dichotomy of humans' usage and animal suffering that always has to be addressed. One second. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, you were talking about conquering the world. And it's, I guess, not admitted but known that Israel is a nuclear armed country. And Israel generally goes by the Torah.
No, they don't. Israel does not go by the Torah. The people who created the state of Israel were atheists. They did not believe in it. And no prime minister was religious. And they do not ask the rabbis before they create policy. So I can't tell. Would you be allowed to have a nuclear bomb as a deterrent? Well, it worked somewhat as a deterrent between America and Russia. They didn't blow themselves up. They came pretty close, but would the world be better off with no bombs? Would it be better off if we turned our swords into plowshares and we melted all our Uzis and all our equipment? And besides the National Rifle Society that goes out shooting, we'll give them a break to shoot at targets, dead targets. But in general, yes, the world will be a better place. Is that the real world? Unfortunately not. We're waiting for the Messiah to straighten us all out. Yeah, one second. Yes, go ahead.
One of the things that I love about Judaism is that learning is so valued, and education. And it may be that in the end, there's not a lot of conflict between being good for ourselves and being good for the animals, because actually, the science is actually clear now that a plant-based diet protects humans from cancer and heart disease. It's actually really clear at a very deep level of science.
Right.
And one of the great authors is Colin Campbell, PhD.
Right. No, but again,
the less animal products you
agreed. But nevertheless, God said if you choose to have a hamburger, you could have a hamburger.
The more we know, the more powerful.
But you have to understand, when they had a hamburger, very infrequently.
Yes.
Because to go and slaughter an animal was prohibitive. They only did it at festivals.
Exactly, and now it's wholesale.
Right, so therefore that's like anything to... Obesity is, I'm one to talk, obviously, is the scourge of society for young people. They get diabetes because they're obese. We're definitely not taking care of our health. Soda, which we serve plenty over here, is destruction. Even diet soda is even worse. And we do things that are inappropriate to our health. That is the plague of plenty. We have the plague of plenty, and that's God says, here it is, do what you want. God isn't going to dictate your diet. You could decide whether you want to be healthy or not. That's part of life.
Yes. Shifting away from food now. In the Bible, God says, I will destroy those who destroy the earth.
What does he mean? Doesn't say that. He didn't. I don't recall such a passage.
Yeah, there is a passage.
Okay, I'd have to see it before I comment on it. You'll have to show
it
to me.
I just wanted to know if he meant that allegorically.
I don't know what destroys.
Are we destroying the earth?
I'm not sure. I'd have to see the passage inside to see how what the Hebrew translation. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yes.
I just want to tell you, getting back to away from food and to snacks.
That's next month's lecture. You don't want to mix two lectures together. Oh, birth control, okay.
But the thing about it is I know there's been a lot of problems with the use of condoms, especially in South America and Central America.
Well, there are many other methods of birth control.
But what it is used as a disease preventative instead of just birth control.
I understand. And you should know that circumcision is a great thing because circumcision prevents many sexually transmitted diseases. So even if you're not Jewish, you should be circumcised. But I'm not on the pro-circumcision movement. Yes, but exactly what Judaism allows and why, which types of birth control, we could talk privately. I don't want to talk in public. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have a question, but I have also something to add to this one.
Okay.
It's not really related to sex, it's related to the circumcision.
Yes.
I don't know what tribe got lost where, but the original natives of the country where I was born had the circumcision as part of their ceremonial rites.
You'd be surprised how many native populations do have circumcision. Unfortunately, they also do circumcisions for women, which is very cruel and inhuman and definitely should be banned by the world agencies.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
My question was about recycling.
Yes.
I'm shocked with what you told us, not because I do not believe it, but that there is so much waste in nowadays of the recycle world, and we are talking generally about countries that have data. What about in the third world countries? I have been so close to them, and grew up in some, and lived in some, you just cannot waste. So can you give us a...
Well, this is the curse of plenty. People who have a lot don't appreciate what they have and they waste. That's the problem. People who grew up in poverty or grew up in the Depression, anybody who grew up in the Depression, I don't think anybody's here grew up in the Depression, but your parents did, and they didn't waste things. They appreciated every single piece of food. And when they said, eat your food because people are starving in China or whatever, they meant it. And they seriously meant it. Now you tell your kids that they laugh at you. But it's all dependent. If you grow up in plenty, you have no appreciation. That's why we are in a terrible situation. In one hand, it's unbelievable we have so much plenty, and it's great. On the other hand, we have to develop an awareness and a consciousness of appreciation of what we have and not to waste our resources.
I come from Brazil, South America also. I lived there many years. And what you said made me remember that they also dump truckloads of tomatoes, coffee, everything, instead of giving to the poor, starving people just because they want to keep the price.
That's a problem. That's a plug for socialism. But nobody wants to be a socialist. All right, one last question because everybody deserves it. Oh, you had a question? I'm sorry. Two last questions.
I'm sorry. I just wondered, you said that in Judaism, on the topic of abortion,
yes,
that it's not really a baby until is it born. Is that when it's a baby?
It's not considered a total human life until it's born. Until then, it is a quasi-human life, and only for certain reasons is it allowed to be aborted. But otherwise, it is forbidden to abort a child just because they have a choice. I decide, some politicians say, my daughter made a mistake. Why should she suffer all her life? She should have an abortion. Well, sorry. Sometimes you have to accept the responsibility for your actions, and you don't want the kid, then have the kid born and give it to adoption. You have no right, for your convenience, to go and abort a fetus.
That's the daughter dies in childbirth.
Of course. Remember, we said if there's any doubt of the mother's life, that is perfectly permissible.
Well, sometimes you can't predict it.
If the doctor says that there is a doubt, then we do it. We don't take any chances with the mother's life. I'm just talking about pure out of inconvenience. I don't want to have a kid. Well, sorry. You know, there's a concept of responsibility. All right, one last question?
You said to make a comment about wasting food.
Yes.
On the way over here, I was listening.
And everybody has to finish all the ice cream tonight. You do not want to waste one drop.
The surprise is that we did it during the weekend. Has a program where they pack a weekend pack of food for children. Some children, the only place they can even get breakfast is at school, but then those children go home on Friday. That could be their last meal, lunch.
Well, it's unfortunate because I worked, when my father had a store, I used to work there during summers and was in a very poor neighborhood. And I saw the people, when the mothers got their food stamps, the first thing they went, they bought beer, they bought junk, and lastly came stuff for the kids. So there's a social irresponsibility with food stamps, but they have to do it, and the store owners are unscrupulous, and they lie about food stamps. Instead of, even if they say food stamps have to be used for vegetables and healthy products, they will allow you to buy unhealthy things and say they were vegetables. So we're dealing with a very corrupt system, even though they mean well. Something has to be done to ensure that the children get the proper nutrition.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.